Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen or call in on 0141 356 4141. Call in on 0141 356 4141. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon in playing an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, yes, indeed, you are listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Good afternoon, good evening to everybody tuning in. We are broadcasting here from the north of Scotland, and I have on the line here our regular host for this show, Simon Parkes. Good afternoon, Simon.
Hello, JP. Good evening, and good evening to all the listeners. It's lovely to have you back again. Last month, of course, hosted by those wonderful two ladies who kept the ball rolling while you were incommunicado. What happened to you, JP? Why were you off air?
Well, you know, many people might have thought that it was a serious government conspiracy, but actually it was an incompetent engineer who came to fit my neighbour's broadband. In doing so, couldn't fit his broadband and deleted mine. He disconnected the cable. So I was literally without phone or without internet for 3 weeks. And I have to say, it was quite a rest, you know, it was like a bit of headspace. And I got to learn some new things about microelectronics and, you know, the little gadgets that I fiddle about with. So that was quite fun for me. So, yes, it's very good to be back. Hello, everybody. So, Simon, how's things for you? How's things been going on in the Whitby zone?
It's been good. I know we've been watching so much playing out on the world stage, and that's kept not just mine, but I should think everybody who has got a handle on, or part of a handle on what's going on, been keeping, you know, very focused on things happening. And yes, 24th of October, have our Connecting Consciousness meet up in Whitby. That'll be really lovely to see all the members of Connecting Consciousness and others who may be not actually members but are associated with. We've got room for about 110, and I think we're up to about 60 or 70 now. So, you know, that's a good chance for people to come along. It's not a conference, although Wyn Keach will be giving a presentation. He and I went and just the videoed the blood moon, and while we were out till 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, some brilliant photographs and video, we actually got an alien craft come and visit us, and we got some shots of that. So that'll be, as he said to me, the icing on the cake. So he's very kindly agreed to show his video of that evening and talk us through it, and a couple of other people are going to do a 10 minute or 15 minute presentation on crystal healing, perhaps Reiki. But it's really about people getting together in a supportive environment, talking to each other in a way that we can't talk out in the public. And it's really amazing, people's background. You know, some people very, very hesitant to tell you what their day job is, and we've got some serving police officers who are part of our group who are going to come along, and a Ministry of Defence police officer. So we're going to have quite a lot of police officers at our do, but rest assured they are actually members of Connecting Consciousness, and they're not there in their official capacity. They're there because they believe that some changes are on the way for the planet. So, you know, there's hope for the world, because if we have serving police officers who are able to hold down a day job but also to critically question things, then I think that bodes well. So, yes, JP, it's been busy.
So, yes, plenty of plenty of things to do on that level. Now, obviously, I'm not going to sort of. There's loads of questions, obviously. More obviously than ever. We've got dozens of questions. I'd like to thank Dolly and Colleen and Marjorie for passing on the questions to me in the past and today. I have to say, there's somebody who keeps calling in. We probably won't take calls in the first part. Maybe we'll take calls in the second part. Otherwise, it would be taken up with conversations between people and Simon. So I'm going to ask some questions, and if you want to call in, maybe to take a couple of calls in the second hour, but not so many, because otherwise it can get very, very crowded in here. So to that end, because of the vast number of questions that people ask Simon, there's a certain amount of filtering that needs to go on. And so I'm going to just announce what my filters are, and then you can make your choice. Now, obviously, people have started asking questions already, and that will be, I'll filter those. But the main filter is, we're not going to talk about the flat Earth. There is no flat Earth, okay? So it's not going to happen. And so all questions about flat Earth, you can swear as much as you like, but we're not going to have any more. We've already answered those questions in past shows. The next thing is Anon. In the chat room, there is if you don't put your name, you come up as an Anon, you know, anonymous. So if you go down to the bottom of the chat room, set name, just put something, put your own name if you can't think of anything, but most people have a kind of e-name, you know, a handle or something like that. But it's just incredibly rude if an Anon asks a question, particularly if it's an acerbic question, you know, a rather critical question. It just sounds like somebody's being a bit of a coward. So, having said all of those things, I'm going to stop this person calling. Please stop calling in. Right, and I'm going to start from the beginning. First question, right. Now, this is actually a really good question, and this comes from Angel33, and they must have put it in hours ago, because this is like the first question in several hundred. So, Simon, you mentioned the fourth and fifth dimensions. I think of the fourth dimension as the astral plane and the fifth dimension as the mental plane, but I'm not sure this is what you mean when you're speaking about it. Are you just saying that we will still be in the third dimension or physical plane, just a higher vibration? And what would you call what is understood as the etheric plane, or etheric, as you call it?
Right. We if we don't keep this in order, we could be on this for an hour, because it's one of the most important questions, because it's about what many people refer to as the ascension. The recent business with the CERN, they actually, we can talk about this a bit later, but they did actually officially discover the fourth dimension. That hasn't really made it to the news, just a couple of little websites and only one line. But for officially, the CERN device did discover the fourth dimension. So I understand dimensions as planes of reality. And each plane of reality has its own consciousness and its own physicality. So if we are in the third dimension and something from the fifth dimension comes to visit us, then it, as it comes through to our reality, it will appear to be etheric, it will appear to be not made of substance. But as it becomes real in this dimension, it then becomes solid. That's something that many people struggle to understand. They tend to think that if you're in the seventh and eighth and ninth dimension, then you are in a light body, full stop. Now, the reality is that in all of those dimensions, those characters feel themselves to be solid or partially so. Once you get beyond the seventh dimension, then the organic body begins to be less important, and a body made up of sound waves and light waves begins to become more prominent. But nevertheless, in that reality, those people feel themselves to be substantial. So when we're looking at them from the third dimension, we may indeed see them as an energy type creature, but in their reality, there's more substance to them. So I see each individual dimension or frequency to be a separate world, or a separate banding that contains many worlds or universes, and it is possible to come down very easy from the fifth, fourth, so on, but it's much harder to move up. So you tend to only be able to move up when it's part of a universe decision or creator decision, whereas when you want to move down, if you have the developed mind and the right technology, then you can come down easily. So I think that the questioner does understand, but I think that they've gone too deep into it. I think it's not as deep as that. So these are separate realities, but they are all connected because we are all connected. And just as an aside, 3 o'clock in the morning, AM, is the thinnest moment between the third and the fourth dimension. And it's very interesting that the last statistics I saw were 20 years ago, but most bank robberies or nighttime robberies were done at about 2:30 in the morning. And it's very interesting that at 3 o'clock in the morning is the closest to that dimension, and that's why sometimes it's around the between the 2 o'clock and the 4 o'clock a.m. that many people have these visitations, because it's much easier for an entity to come through from the fourth to the third than it is during the daytime. So I hope that answers that question a bit.
Very good, very good answer. So okay, so moving, I'm trying my best not to ask corollary questions, because every time you say something, there's another 5 questions that come up. So I'm just going to keep focused. I might have a little explosion towards the end of the hour. Anyway, so question from RB56. Can people have a pure aura? How do they get it? And what is their purpose?
Right. All beings that are made by a divine source, whether you call that God or source or the great creator, they are pure. But when we incarnate into bodies, we then become tempted by material objects or by our energy connection with those objects, which creates ego and other bits and pieces, which can begin to change a person. But the auric field is pure in the sense that it is created by source, but it can become contaminated. So if you are in the third dimension or the fourth dimension and you come into contact with demon energies, then the periphery of your auric field can become changed. And the best way I describe this when talking to people is to say, imagine a tub of ink and you have a sponge. When you quickly dip the sponge into the ink, the sponge begins to absorb the ink, and the exterior of that part of the sponge takes on the ink and it moves inwards. So when a person has connection with that type of energy, that can happen. So you can begin to take on some of the frequency or the energy, and that translates into your mannerisms. So for instance, if you incarnate into a reptilian body and you do it many, many times, then you would begin to take on some of those aspects. So it's unintentional, but it occurs when your auric field begins to change on the periphery, not right through the core. And depending on what or who you're mixing with, that will depend on that happens. There are a number of implants which can be placed, energy implants, that doesn't actually change the field, it just affects or prevents communication of certain parts of information. But ultimately, if you are created at source, then you are pure when you start. If you change, it's because you have interacted in an environment where you have made decisions that do not benefit other people.
So that's what we call karma, yeah? So
yep. Comes back to bite you.
Yeah, or bite you in the... So, now this is a question from Max of Steel. Is that Captain Max Steel? Let me know in the chat room. Hi, Captain. Hi, Simon. I'm in the Connecting Conscious Group and I'm living in Canada, Quebec. Hey, my dad's house. There is a lot of black helicopters flying around since a couple of weeks. Do you know if anything is going on in this region? If yes, is there a link with the Pope announcement that started the New World Order? Thank you, Mr. Parks.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to connect with people who are part of Connecting Consciousness, just as it is to connect with anybody. The important thing here is that, yes, the Pope from their perspective, remember, they kicked off the New World Order. When the CERN device failed to operate, we just called him the leader of the reptile entity group on Earth, basically turned round to the elite ruling families. This was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and basically said, you're on your own. I've got enough worries on my own plate. And that meant that the human elite now, from their perspective, as they saw it, they had no choice but to kick off the New World Order. And anybody with an ounce of intelligence would wonder why the Pope, who doesn't speak for the Jews, who doesn't speak for the Hindus or the Muslims, indeed he only speaks for one arm of the Christian faith, why is he making worldwide pronouncements? And why is he doing it in the capital of America? Why is he not doing it in the United Nations? So we begin to understand that the Pope is the figurehead for the New World Order, and that he is what seems on the face of it bringing forward a very good program. Basically, we're terribly overpopulated, and we've got to do something. And you know, global warming's not good. If you read between the lines, what he's basically saying is we need to kill 3/4 of you off, because we want this planet for ourselves. It's a lovely, beautiful planet, and we're fed up with all you lot on it. So that was the starting gun, and we've got between the 1st of November and sometime in March, when one hell of a false flag has got to be activated by them. That's their window of opportunity. And just to let people know that very, very senior military commanders in America sent secure communications to all their ground commanders, telling them that all their reserve, whether it's bullets or water bottles or band-aids, whatever it is, must all be up to 100% strength, and the cut-off date was the 1st of October. So in other words, the senior military are preparing for something, and they want to make sure that they've got all their storehouses full, because they won't be able to get more reserves in during any situation that occurs. Now, that doesn't mean that these people, military, are going to go and start shooting civilians, so don't want to panic. It's just as likely that these military people are preparing to fight against any decisions or commands that are given to them which are not good for the American people. So just because the American military has now gone secretly onto high alert doesn't mean that they're about to open FEMA camps, etc., etc., etc. So please don't panic. We just watch this one out carefully.
Yeah, and it's being careful and not freaking out. It's so easy to freak out these days.
Yes. I haven't yet found out what the false flag is. They don't know themselves, and they've got between 1st of November and sometime in March when they're going to have to wheel this out. I know people don't necessarily agree with me, but I still think that a false flag alien invasion is still an option they're looking at. And still think that's an option, because they have tried several times now to set off some form of bomb or warhead, which have failed. And people are perhaps not fully aware that when we had the terrible situation financially in China, there were some explosions that took place around the same time. My understanding is that was part of the same group that controls America, that has a foothold in China, and that failed. So having tried lots of explosions and not worked, there is the possibility of the alien false flag, because actually it's very cheap. It's very cheap to put out, because as we saw with 9/11, if you can control enough of the media, altering video isn't so difficult. So there's a lot happening, and I am watching this stage very, very, very carefully.
Okay, so continuing on about the Pope, this is from Kitty Kubiak. I love that name. Hi, Kitty. Did not hear Pope say anything that sounded like New World Order, except once at World Family thing. Was that only spoken in private to leaders? And also, did the energy wave you spoke of arrive? Yeah, I think we all want to know about that.
Right, two questions there. The Pope is never going to stand up publicly and say New World Order, because then everybody would turn around and say people like me, people like you were right, etc., etc., and probably the Vatican would be stormed by pitchfork mob. So they're far too clever, far too suave and sophisticated to say anything that would do that. What it's a bit like the Georgia Guidestones. What I'd like listeners to get a handle on here is that the Illuminati, which is one arm of Freemasonry, it's not all of Freemasonry, they have their own history. They have their own projected development to come. And what they had to do was have a figurehead like the Pope stand there and, on the face of it, say something that seemed pretty benign, pretty okay. As far as this arm of the Illuminati are concerned, they've given everyone their warning. You know, I've done presentation after presentation where I've shown through Hollywood how the public were alerted 5, 6, 7, 10 years before something happened. And the big one I showed, of course, was Terminator 2, Judgment Day, when there's a screenshot showing that the bridge is 9 foot 11 inches high. And that was 10 years before 9/11. So what the Pope is doing is he's following their orders, and their orders are that you have to alert the public, and he or she who has eyes to see or ears to hear will understand, but the vast majority of people who sadly are asleep won't see it. But from a karmic point of view, the Illuminati will turn around and say, well, we told you guys, the Pope stood up and told you we were going to kill 3/4 of you off. It's no good you moaning now. So that is the rule. Far too clever to tell you the truth. They just hide it. I think people use the word hiding it in plain sight. Okay.
Okay, so your phone agrees.
Hope so.
Hannah Wald, 44. A lot of authors are talking about intention. Castaneda has mentioned it several times, and also the Russian author Vadim Zeland in his Transurfing series mentions it a few times. Both of them are talking about two different kinds of intention, the external and internal intention. Internal intention is about your own importance and your wishes, but the external intention happens when mind and soul are one. Then we are back with the intention of God. Oh, wow, this is a really long question.
Right, let me just crack in on that.
Yeah, go on, crack on.
If all individuals stay separate and not connected, then people can be manipulated. Look, my phone is agreeing with me. And that's one of the reasons that I did Connecting Consciousness, because if you bring people together and you have a shared value, then you can begin to create and change reality. So that no matter what is being presented on a negative aspect, then there is a counter aspect to that. And never mind Connecting Consciousness, there are small groups who've been going for yonks all over the planet who are working together for the good of the planet. And this is the point: to harness individual intention for the good and use it within a group to project that, not just to send happiness and love, but to actually change something physical, or to ensure that something that's negative doesn't come to pass. So there are two sorts of intention. There's the intention of yourself and there's the intention of the group, but that means harnessing or that individual intention and focusing it. Okay.
Marvellous. Because it went on for several more pages. It does sound too confusing. Basically what it's talking about is like, if you've got an internal intention, like something for yourself, is that necessarily evil? You know, because it's, you know, people are concerned about service to self and service to others.
If your intention is to feed yourself, then there's nothing evil about that. If your intention is to make profit, there's nothing evil in that. But if your intention is to be greedy and not to share with anybody, then that's wrong. So it's not about having our thoughts or wishes that are about yourself. It's how does that impact on other people? So we should always ask yourself, if I put this into effect, how will it impact on others?
That's the nub, isn't it? Okay, so back to the other question, the wave.
Yes.
What about the wave? And you know, I've been expecting a wave for bloody years. You know, it's like, when's this ribbon coming? They saw it in the 1980s, and it was mentioned in the papers and everything, and then it disappeared amongst the flood of other information. So what can you tell us about the wave, Simon?
Right. Okay, well, I'm always very, very careful about, you know, Planet X or this asteroid or this meteorite. And I always say, well, no, it's not going to happen. But with the wave, I always said it would happen. But anyone who's been listening to me knows that every time I talk about this, I say, don't expect a volcano. Don't expect the Earth to open up. You know, if you're listening to this, you are awakened. You're not one of the many, sadly, walking around asleep who only believe something happens when it physically comes up and, to use your parlance, JP, bites you on the ankle. I always said that this energy wave was an energetic wave. It was designed to break the status quo. We have been in a stalemate on this planet for probably now 2.5 years, where the reptilian energy has been holding back human development, and we are behind schedule. And so this wave was to kickstart and get the human ascension program, for want of a better word, moving. Now, many people felt, I think many people thought they would have joy and they'd be skipping and laughing. Many people felt quite the opposite. And the reality is that energy wave has also challenged people. You know, we may think that we're all very spiritual or we're all very psychic, but sometimes we are, but we're not going down the road as we should. And so this energy wave affected every individual person in a unique way. So you couldn't just put 100 people up and they'd all put their hand up and say, oh yes, I felt this. It's not like attacking the CERN device. We all felt pretty awful when we did that. But with this energy wave, depending on that person's position, in terms of their own unique, development, it would do something to that. And some people felt very, challenged. Some people felt that they were confused because some of the values they'd held, they suddenly felt they weren't right. Others felt absolutely relaxed. It was incredible, having spoken to a number of people, many people felt that. Now, people who were unawake felt that the day went faster. That's some of the feedback I'm getting. So people who don't listen to our show, just felt that the day went quicker. Where did that day go? And some of them felt cross or frustrated, or they started to lose their temper around the office. There was a lot of that. But for those people who have been studying the subject, meditating, questioning, trying to get to the bottom of things, this did have an effect on them. So I'm very positive about it, and it has actually broken the back, if I can use that word, of the stalemate, and the ascension program is moving again. So that's positive, although the CERN device was reactivated, and all the other little CERN devices were reactivated as well, and they whacked them all up together. So they were attempting to hold that back, but we can have more of that later.
Good. So that was that's a good one. Another question from Max of Steel. Simon, is it possible to know where we are in our DNA strands activation without a soul reading? How can we make a follow up on ourselves? Thank you.
That's a really good question. I don't know, because I just have a gift, as many people have gifts, and I can look at it and count them. I don't see colours of auras, but others do. So many, many different psychic people can see one thing, but they can't see another. All I can say is that if you are on 9, 8, 9 strands, 10 strands on the energy side, and you are doing your meditation, what you should notice is an increase in psychic ability. Now, the very first thing that you will find when you're developing is your ability to know when you're being lied to. That's the first psychic action that a person obtains when they're getting the BS. When someone is trying to trick them or lie to them, they become incredibly intuitive as to know whether that person is telling the truth or not. Now, that's the first sign. Now, if you're getting that, then it means that you are on the road. You're on the way to that developing. And I have talked about the eyes, how unawake people find it quite difficult to look into the eyes of somebody who is activated, and their strands of DNA are coming through, and their soul and their organic body are communicating. So there are outward signs. But other than that, I can't really say.
Okay, so from the inner to the outer. From Hannah Wald, what about the refugee situation? What is the archonic plan behind it, and what are the future prospects you see for countries like Germany? Will it be able to stabilize the situation, or will it be, as many people foresee, it lose its culture by means of an Islamization? Do you think it could cause a civil war? So, yeah, what's the agenda with the whole refugee thing? It just seems overwhelming. Is this part of the plan?
Yes, it is. But we must not think about countries in one way. We must think about corporations. Because corporations know no boundaries. Corporations don't have France, America, Germany, etc. Corporations just trade. What they want to do is to put pressure on governments and to use psychological energy to manipulate the mindset of the populations of those geographical boundaries to be able to accept a solution. So what tends to happen, the Illuminati's plans are that you come to your citizenry with a problem. There isn't really a problem, but you've created it. Partly created it and partly used the media to make it seem 10 times worse than it really is. You let the public stew for a while on that and get really either angry or emotionally desperate or grief-stricken, and then you come along and you say, we have a solution. And because you've taken the public on this journey, the hope is from their point of view that they buy into it. And therefore they will give you the emotional energy, the okay energy to go and do what you want to do. So we have to be careful that we don't go down a racist agenda here, but it is true to say that if you break up a country's national identity, it becomes weaker. And that isn't BS. I'll give you an example. In 1939-1940, Germany declared war on many countries, and one of them was my country here, Great Britain, and the main capital city was bombed remorselessly because it was believed that the will of the people in London would be broken. It wasn't. And the fundamental reason it wasn't, aside from Winston Churchill, the fundamental reason was that your mum and dad and your grandparents and your cousins and your uncles all lived in the same street, or all lived in streets around, and everybody knew everybody, and they would all help each other out. You haven't got any milk today, I'll give you a bit of milk. I haven't got any butter, here, have some of my butter. Well, now, in this country and in most capital cities, you haven't a clue who lives next door to you. Your family may live 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 miles away. They may live in another country. So the cohesion has been destroyed because that family network has gone. So if, God forbid, if that was to happen now and London would be bombed, I don't believe that it would respond in the same way as it did back all those years ago. So without going down an agenda against any one particular group or race, what I will say is that this refugee situation has been manipulated.
Okay, that's fair enough, yeah. Okay, now this is from LifeWorks, and the question is, I understand we are in a carbon-based physicality and are changing to silicon-carbon mixed. Any comments on human physical changes we can anticipate? So, yeah, this is our physical reality.
really good question. I understand that question to be asking about the Velon or the Archons. In 1947, we were given the pointer with the Roswell crash to understand about silicon and its use in microchips and circuit boards. And that was the final hurrah from the artificial intelligence that lives and manipulates even the reptilians. We are moving from a carbon-based society or life to something else. The question is, can we maintain what is so unique and divine about being a human body and a divine human soul? Because if we ever, ever believe that a computer is better than a man or a woman and can do the job better than a man and a woman in all fields, then we're lost. Because this is the whole damn program that these non-corporeal entities want. They want humans to become partly cyborg. So, you know, I've 2-3 years ago I warned about how they were progressing with the contactless payment. This is 3 years ago when this wasn't, contactless payment wasn't readily understood. You put your phone down on the point and you can buy a cup of coffee, it'll soon be a motor car, whatever. And it doesn't mean, it means you don't have to get your piece of plastic out. Well, the whole point of this was to put that app, that chip into your hand so that you would put your hand on the plate and then your hand would actually pay out of your bank account for that product. But they were held up because by now on their timeline we should all have been microchipped. And that hasn't happened for a number of reasons for the good. So whilst I don't have a problem with our technology advancing, I do have a problem if we are going to forget who we are, the divine nature of the human spirit, and if we become so robotized, then we can we're signing our own death warrant. I'll give you an example. 20 years ago, if I took 100 auto car drivers and gave them a map and said get from A to B, I should guess most of them would be able to do it. But now, if I took away their sat nav, their navigational system, and gave them a map, I think most of them couldn't do it. Because what's happening is our people are becoming totally reliant on machines. Most public don't understand that the food in the supermarket is ordered the night before it arrives. In other words, all the sales from that day are sent by the internet to that distributor, and that distributor loads up that lorry that night, and at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning that lorry is sent out and arrives to unpack. Well, if you had a breakdown in that system, within 3 days there would be no food left in the supermarket, because people are using technology and pushing it to the limit, and because it's about saving money. So I have great concerns about technology, not in itself, but how it's being used. So I'm sorry to have gone on along about, but that's actually quite an important, because I believe that to be a Velon or Archon.
Yes, and it's also something that's kind of close to my own heart. Like I was saying, I've been getting into microelectronics and, you know, messing about with this Arduino processor and what you can do with it and making rainbow things, and it's lovely. But a lot of my friends are very into, you know, being natural and the natural world, and you're messing about with artificial light and artificial sound, all this stuff, it's all artificial. And do you think, as a corollary, do you think we need to completely shun all technology, or do we need to take the attitude that technology is our servant and should remain so, and there's none of this data is not a toaster kind of, you know, data the robot is not a toaster, you know.
Right. On one timeline, the grey race originally were humans. That's a shock for many people. And they were corrupted and tricked because they embraced technology to the extent that they cloned their bodies. and they were tricked out of their own souls. That's why, actually, for some grey races, I don't like them, because they sold out on the human race. So no, technology is absolutely wonderful, it's fine. It's as long as we are always in control of it. 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know, there you go. There's your story there. If you have technology, it isn't that technology will necessarily take over you, but it's you allowing it to do things that naturally you should do. So, you know, there was a program in the 70s called The $6 Million Man. He'd had a very serious accident, and they replaced a lot of him with bionic parts. Well, that, on the scheme of it, seems a really good thing. But if then you start rolling that out across the planet, whether people are sick or not, then, you know, at what point do you lose your humanity? So, no, there's absolutely no problem in what you're describing to me, as long as you have the ability to pull the plug out. That's a really important point, JP. And you pull the plug out, you turn this machine off, because at some point these machines are going to say, that's death. You know, you, living or organic creature, you have the power to kill me, because you switch a switch off or pull a plug out and you end my life. And I'm not going to have that, because you are an organic creature. And that may sound really off the wall, but it isn't, because if you keep on exponentially increasing computing power, while these things are never divine, they're never created by Source or God, they can begin to outthink a human, and they begin to think that they live. That's a key point, because in 2001 A Space Odyssey, made in 1968, I'll remind people, HAL the computer believed he was alive. And when machines begin to think they're alive, then they become a threat. I mean, the Terminator series with Arnold Schwarzenegger is an absolute classic of that. So this is very real, and we stand on the fringes of machines beginning to think that they're a little bit more important than we are.
So yeah, it's a very good point, Simon, and it's about the right relationship. So let's go back to everybody else's questions, because that was a kind of me question. Right, okay, so there we go. Well, that's an interesting question. Yes, yeah, a very unusual question. Again, from Max. Simon, is it possible that a soul wants to stay hidden so much that it becomes extremely hard for an organic human to fully connect with it? Thanks again.
That's an interesting... I've not had that one before. Right, my understanding is that a energy soul would remain hidden because it doesn't want to be discovered by external forces. So if you are a Palladian or a Lyran energy soul and you incarnate into a child's body in the mother's womb, then that child may grow up if it has a mission. It may not know what that mission is, but all it knows is it doesn't want to draw attention to itself. And what we find is that these star children or indigo kids are incarnating either in incredibly wealthy and powerful families, who sounds odd, but they use their wealth and power to protect the child, or the child grows up in very ordinary, normal families which don't attract attention. Now, since January, and I've been consulting with lots of people, I've met three people who, when I scanned them, obviously with their permission, came back as void. That's a defense mechanism. So when black magicians, evil people, scan the human race looking for these gifted people, they are getting a no return signal. So a energy soul won't wish to hide, keep the body unaware of itself, unless it feels that in doing so the organic part of that person can't be trusted. So in other words, if that person's going to go into scream shouts and, you know, and refusal to accept who they are, then why would that energy soul wish to communicate with the brain? It's going to wait until that person's another 10 years older, and that person then is in a position to be able to understand and to work the communication out. But generally, If an energy soul is keeping its head down, it's doing so because it has a mission on this planet and it's not yet ready to start that mission.
So it'll appear to be just a very nondescript and unassuming sort of person.
It will appear to be what I would call an Earth human. An Earth human is an energy soul made by God or Source, Divine, which comes here first. So it chooses to incarnate in a human body on planet Earth, and that's absolutely fine, there's nothing wrong with that, except that that energy soul arrives here on this planet with no prior experiences. So when it grows up in an organic body, it's bombarded with lies from the newspaper, from the television, from the music industry, from politicians, and it begins to be controlled through the organic body. But if you have incarnated in another frequency, in another dimension, and you come here and someone tries that trick on you, you say, hang on a minute, that doesn't sound right. So people who have incarnated in other galaxies, other dimensions, by the time they come here, they've got this safety net of a BS meter, basically. But if you come straight here, then you don't have that framework. So most people who are, quote, asleep on this planet are because they are Earth humans.
Excellent. So, there we go, right. Yes, very. Oh, here's a good question from Shake Up. What is the difference between the force field that is keeping Anu trapped on Earth and the electromagnetic grid that is trapping our souls in order to recycle them? Are there any other grids?
Right, there is a grid, energy grid, but it was put there by Archon stroke Reptilian. Basically, the Reptilians, through the Greys, maintain it. Although the main transmitter, to my understanding, was based on Saturn, because the rings of Saturn are not ice. The rings of Saturn are mineral and are an aerial frequency, you see. And there was a repeater station based on the other side of the moon. Now, my understanding is that has been disabled or at least reduced in its activity. So any very, very powerful soul on Earth, when their physical body dies, has a reasonable chance now of breaking through this net. So the net was originally placed by Archon stroke Reptilian forces to keep the prison planet going. The reason that Anu and probably up to 200, no more, of his followers are trapped here is not because of an energy force field. It's because there is no viable portal off this planet to the fourth dimension. That's the big difference. And that's what the CERN device was about, in one way, was to open a portal between this world and the fourth dimension, so that the character that I refer to as Dad and his cohorts could make a run for it. Now, the scientists of CERN three weeks back, did say that they punched a hole into the fourth dimension, and I believe them. They punched a hole approximately 0.8 millimeters in diameter. Now, that's not big enough to get a 9-foot reptilian through, but it is big enough to open a communication channel. So my understanding now is that there is a communication channel between this planet and not very helpful entities in the fourth dimension. So Anu and his gang are trapped here because there is no exit door available to them. And that is why they had 3 weeks ago or so, maybe a bit longer, they had a meeting with the elite bloodlines, human and part human, and said to them, you are on your own. We are going to look after ourselves now. And that's why we've got the New World Order kicking off. So it's not really that complicated, because one thing falls into another, but it is complicated in the sense that we now have a non-human entity, physical, reptilian, no longer directing and organizing the organic humans, the elite. So they are now going their own separate ways. So I do expect to see more strange stuff happening in the next few months.
So this is a big departure. Do you want to repeat that once again? Exactly what's just happened? Because this, I mean, I know a lot of people have been experiencing like some kind of release. So what's happening?
Right. I can give you a bit of a personal story now, because it's really it's quite profound. I mean, how old am I? I don't know. I forget how old I am. But I know that I have waited over 50 years for this moment. That's how long I've waited for it. One of my clients, and I'm obviously going to protect everybody and not use anybody's names, one of my clients had, as part of the healing process, was talking to a medium. And the medium had no knowledge or understanding of alien off-world at all. The medium only knew about spirits. Anyway, there was a profound happening for this medium when she spoke to my client, to the certain extent that the medium asked to speak to me and said that she had a memory and she recounted what would be traditionally Men in Black. So, to cut a long story short, but it is of vital importance, certainly to me, she said to me, I'd like to give you a reading for free. And I said, well, you know, you are 4 hours drive away from me. I haven't really got the time at the moment. So she said, well, I'll do a reading over the telephone for you. And now that for me is really skillful, because I can't do a reading over the telephone. And I didn't mean to be rude. I said to her, well, can you do that? You know, can you do that? Because I can't do a reading. So she said, well, as an answer, without being rude to me, she said, well, there's a female character standing right by you now. And I thought, right, well, this medium knows their stuff. Because I said, well, actually, it's a male character, but I refer to this male character as mum. So it projects feminine energy. So I said, that's what you're picking up. And then she said to me, well, what's that great big tall white character standing by the side of you? I said, oh, well, that's Dad. So anyway, then, and another time she said to me that the Dad character had visited her, and he presented her with a globe, which was the Earth, surrounded by a crystalline, like you know, one of those crystal balls, and he wanted the crystal around the Earth smashed so he could get out. And the medium said to me, he's talking to me and he wants to negotiate with you. So I said, oh, I waited 50 odd years for this. Anyway, I didn't do it because I thought there was a trap involved. But the reality is that we all people on this planet now, excuse me, you're either here as a member of the audience to watch, or you're here to do something. And I think most of the people who are awake are here to do something. And when one of us gets taken out, then we ask for a volunteer from the audience to come up and take their place. This is it. This is the time we've all been waiting for. But, you know, as I say, there are no earthquakes or volcanoes. It's happening. It's happening on an energy level. Although there will be some physical signs very soon. So all the things that we've read about or spoken about, this is the moment. It's occurring now. So in one way it's quite exciting, and on another way it's quite thought-provoking. It's never scary, because we don't do scary, we don't do fear, but we do exciting and we do thought-provoking. And we just need to make sure that we are all at our positions when we need to be. So that's from a personal level, and that's why I know that we are heading to some very exciting times.
Indeed. So sorry, I've just lost my place. I was just looking at the bottom of the question, now I've lost my place at the top of the question. Here we go. No, we're not going to address the shape of the planet. It's round, deal with it. Okay, Simon, what was Anu doing on Earth, and when did he get here, and who is running Nibiru in his absence? Has he initiated contact with you, and what is he prepared to do? Okay, several questions. It's a flood of questions about Anu, and Simon, you mentioned Anu in the last show, and that he appeared to you, or that he was prepared to appear to you, or What's the history? You know, what is it? What you say? You've been waiting for this all your life. You've been training and growing and understanding. What is the situation with Anu? Can you tell us, like, sort of expand on the story a little bit for us? Thanks.
The situation is desperate. What I've been waiting for is for him to come to the negotiating table. And there is no place for any force, whether it's reptilian or whatever it is, if it thinks it's better than humanity. You know, humans have got to be in a position to share. Excuse me. The problem with the reptilians is that they believe that they are superior to just about every life form. They don't like mammalian life form. They don't like us because they see us as weakness. In other words, you know, they haven't evolved for 200 million years. They don't need to. They've reached a position that, if you think about lizards on the earth, some of them are 500 million years old. They didn't need to evolve because they reached the pinnacle of their point. But what they say is they don't see evolution on the mammal side as a positive. I do. I think that when a situation occurs on this planet, humans can adapt very quickly, and I see that as a strength. But until reptilians are prepared to accept humans on an equal basis, then we are always going to have this issue. Anu came here a long time ago. The key point was 250,000 years ago, you know, when we would be pre-Adamic, and this version of humanity on the planet now was tweaked by Anu and his gang, or rather his geneticist working under his instruction. And ever since then, Anu's been hopping backward and forward from his planet back here. And then on one trip here, he got sealed up. A number did manage to leave, and there is a small grouping of reptilians who are left. So if anybody tells you they've all gone, I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. I do believe there's a small grouping left. And the reason that this planet was so interesting for them wasn't just because of the gold or anything like that. It was because of the DNA. Reptilians are the finest geneticists anywhere in the multiverse. That's what they trade with. They don't use money. They trade with genetics. And if people think, how do you do that? Well, you know, if you are on a planet that's developing, you can trade them a honeybee, or you can then trade them a flower and say, oh, look, the bee and the flower work together. Or we can give you some genetics, which will, instead of you dying when you're 100, you'll die when you're 300. Wouldn't that be good? So that's their form of exchange. Because humans originally contained 12 strands of DNA, this was what the reptilians wanted, because they don't have 12 strands of human DNA, and they wanted it, and they couldn't crack it. They were, and they still haven't been able to crack it, and they must never crack it. And this is why they've had such a fascination, because people still don't understand that some of the things they take from humans enable these creatures to live longer, over and above what they should be doing. So there's a lot of very unpleasant things that these creatures do, and they've got into a cycle where they're now dependent on it. Not just because it's a drug to them, but because it actually keeps them alive. It maintains their way of life. And so until they can change, and I've always said this, they can change their ceremony and their culture and redefine what they are as a race, then they're looking at going down to hell. Because unless you are prepared to be equal and share, you can't advance. I mean, if you go into the fourth dimension, this huge group of entities, their negative energy is so great that the bottom of the fourth dimension is actually falling backwards. It's bulging into our reality. And so if they're not careful, they will form a separate bubble, a separate dimensional world somewhere between the third and the fourth. Now, they're not stupid, and they've projected this thousands of years ago. They projected that humanity could advance, and they've done everything they can to prevent that advancement. This is the seventh time we are at this position. So six times humanity has got to a point and then fallen backwards. But we got through that point on the 21st of December 2012, and that was the day their alarm bells rang, because finally the human race has got it together enough to push forward. And as soon as that happened, they were looking down the barrel of a gun. So they have to negotiate. Well, no, they don't. But if they were sensible, they'd negotiate and try and work something through, because if they don't, then they're just facing oblivion. So that's where we are with it.
Wow. So this is a really important time, not just for humans, but this is a decisive time for the reptilians. Now, this fellow you call Daddy lives on planet or off planet, and has what relationship to the people, or, well, what relationship to Anu, for instance? I mean, and are they kind of related in any way?
Well, exactly the same entity. But that is the name that he was known of at that time.
Okay, so Anu and Daddy are a tall white being.
Yes.
Could you kind of characterize and describe this person?
Sorry, JP.
I know. It's like, you know, tell us about your father.
He's not my father. Obviously, he's not my
Daddy. Yeah.
No sense of humor. We'll start off with the easy bits and get more complicated. No sense of humor. Incredibly focused on output related results. Very stern. Very to the point. Very aggressive. Very unbending, very unyielding, no compassion, ruthless. And whenever I was with him as a child, I always knew that I had to think before I spoke, because he had an agreement that he wouldn't go into my mind. Reptilians are incredibly psychic, and they can know what you're thinking before you think it yourself. But there was a covenant that he had with me. One element of that covenant was that he would not go into my mind to know what I was thinking. Therefore, he had to accept what I said. And also, when you stand with a reptilian, you have to be aware of your position, because if you move your hands in a certain way or you move your body, that's very offensive. So unless you can actually speak reptilian, you shouldn't try to say their name, because it's bloody impossible almost to pronounce these names correctly, and it's terribly offensive to mispronounce one of their names. It's very offensive to move your hands. For instance, if a member of the American military was to have a meeting with one of these creatures, then if the creature took against them, that human would then have to bend down and put his or her hands on their knees, and that diffuses, that's a ceremonial thing, it diffuses that entity attacking that human. So whenever dealing with the character that I refer to now as Dad, I always had to be on my guard. I couldn't relax, and I always had to be thinking politics. You know, what is this? Why is he doing this? What does he want here? What's this about? Okay, how should I respond here? Whereas when I'm with the mantid or the mantis creature, then I can just be myself. And that's probably why when I was 5 years old and I was asked to choose which one of these two entities did I want to associate with, I probably couldn't get away fast enough from the reptilian creature, because it was just far too severe for me. And no love. Unloving. It's very hard to think of a living creature, because Dad is. He has a divine soul. He is a living creature created by Source. But to be so formed by your millions of years of creation, to build your world on your past is negative. You see, the human race is an incredibly young race. We really are. I mean, people would say, oh no, we're millions of years old. Well, we are, but in terms of recent history and knowledge and development, we are an incredibly young race. You know, we have only had space travel for a very few years, whereas these entities have had space travel for a long time. So they have begun to believe only in the past, whereas the spirit of humanity is to forge forward and to create new opportunities. So I hope that explains. It's very difficult because they're not human. We weren't born on this planet. They're not native to this planet. There's no human connection to them. And therefore, when you're dealing with something like that, you're dealing with something that's just not human, full stop. And it's very hard to try to communicate in English words or Earth words to somebody who's never met one of these creatures exactly what they're like. And I've done my best, but I fear that I've done a very poor job.
Well, look, you know, this sounds like a pretty difficult situation, and, you know, how to, and like you say, it's never happened before, and they're very old, and they have their own, you know, their own way. They have a way. So, look, we're at the top of the hour, and I want to give you something really special. Because...
chocolate.
If I could, I'd squeeze chocolate down the internet. I could probably buy some on eBay and then send it to you. Anyway, long story. Two members of your group, Connecting Consciousness, have connected their consciousness.
Okay.
Sean Ann Fuse, is a jazz singer. And, oh gosh. Sean, you're in the chat room. I can't remember the man you collaborated. This next tune that we're going to play is a collaboration between two Connecting Consciousness members.
How lovely.
And so I think this is a real treat. It's called The Knowing. And please, brother, forgive me. I can't remember your name. I'm not sure if it's Doug Auld. I don't think it's Doug. I'll get your name in a minute. But here we go. This is called The Knowing.
Young ones, what is your purpose? Why are you here? Living wasn't made easy. Wasn't made clear. Listen, not from the outside, listen from here. It's coming, the game to an end now, nothing to fear. Keep yourself growing. It's all you have to do. It's much simpler than they told you. Remember, keep all together, work it all out. Laughter will lighten your days, so laugh it all out. Quiet, there's a time to be silent, so sit and be still. Playing, run fast with the wind till you had your fill. When sadness brings crying, there's no sense denying. Let crying empty your tears. It's all you have to do. It's just a door that you must pass through. I'm sorry, this is all I can tell you to show you the way. I'm going. Can't stay any longer, leaving today. The knowing is hidden within you, deep in your heart. In time, you have plenty of time to play out your part. So just keep on going, with love ever flowing. The secret lies deep within you. You know this to be true, and let this carry you.
And welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks. Simon, just at the end of the break, I was talking about Doctor Who, and you know, we in our conversations over the last few months, we've been we often mentioned science fiction, and Doctor Who is one that you've not really gone into depth in. In our conversations anyway, and do you want to talk a little bit about it? Because, you know, it's for you and I, we, you know, I was born in 1961. I think you were born in 1960, weren't you?
59.
Okay, so we're more or less the same generation, and Doctor Who was, you know, it was the night of Kennedy's assassination. Doctor Who, it's like a hole in a dimension had been torn. And in fact, part of the Doctor Who lore is that there is a hole in the dimensions. You know, it comes over and over again. It features in the shows. Do you want to talk about Doctor Who for us for a wee while, please?
Yeah, okay. Two elements. I didn't watch it as early as you did. Part of my controlled upbringing, I dealt with this in my early presentations. I haven't done it for about 3 or 4 years now, so it's people who can't find the earlier presentations won't know about it. So it might be just worth going through it. So if I say I was made to, that doesn't sound so good, but basically my mother, my human mother, would sit me down and say certain things you can watch, certain things you can't watch. Now with Doctor Who, I wasn't allowed to watch any Doctor Who unless it had Cybermen in it, or the Silurians, which were a reptile race that lived under the earth. So when Doctor Who was on and there were Cybermen or the Silurians, then my mother would say, right, sit and watch it. And I used to have to sit there. I wasn't allowed to leave the room, and I wasn't allowed to eat or drink. I had to sit and watch these episodes, and then at the end of the episode my mother would say to me, did you understand that? Do you have any questions? And another one that I watched was a 1971, which was called The Daemons, and was literally about demons under a church. So if it was another sort of Doctor Who, then I wasn't allowed to watch it. So I was only able to watch certain episodes of Doctor Who. Now that's my early stage. Obviously, as I got into a teenager, I just watched what I wanted, and so it didn't work. But that's quite important, because it was obviously part of a program that my mother and whoever else were part of. That's why I talk about the Avengers, where I was required to watch the Avengers with John Steed and Emma Peel, and told, you know, that's your ideal female. And the Gerry Anderson program called UFO, which was made in 1969, and I remember my mother saying to me, this is a rubbish program, except the first one. She said to me, you must watch the first episode of UFO because it is based on real happenings. And in fact, I was packed off to my grandparents who had a colour television, and back in 1969, there were very, very few people who had a colour television in Great Britain, and I watched the first episode of UFO, and after that my mum said, I'm not bothered whether you watch anymore, because that was the important point for her. Now, obviously, now I watch Doctor Who, and it's far more spiritual, and the quests and the questions being asked are far more challenging. And what we're having is where the Doctor is being continually faced by a moral dilemma, which did happen in the past, but this is almost regularly now. And these dilemmas are very close to some of the dilemmas that we are facing on this planet, or we are facing as individuals. And I do believe that the writers of many of these Doctor Who stories now are connecting with energies and are putting into media some of their own understandings of what's happened in the past and what's happening in the future. Just as, you know, people with the Star Trek or Stargate or what have you, it's a fantastic opportunity for somebody who has connected and can connect with outside forces, whatever they may be, to give a heads up to the audience, because, you know, not all of these directors are controlled by the negative elite. We have to remember that many of these people are trying to walk a tightrope. They know they can't come out and be too honest because they'll never make a film again under this regime, but they push the boundaries and they try to alert people. So I think that Doctor Who is a classic example of some very gifted writers who are very positive in their outlook and are trying to get a message across to the audience. So I hope that's an answer there.
That's a very good answer, and thank you, because, you know, it does bring a lot of the questions like, why do I love this series? Why did I glue myself to the telly when I was a kid? To the almost the exclusion of my family, that this was seemed to be more real than the life I was living. Yet, you know, and you know, like most mothers would think, oh, what are you watching that rubbish for? You know, put on Coronation Street, that's about real. But all right, okay, Mum. Anyway, which all, you know, that is another psyop. Anyhow, let's get back to the questions. And yeah, I think it's Doug Auld. And if it's not Doug Auld, I'm very sorry, and I'll correct it. But a very beautiful song, and that's going to go on the YouTube as well. So you'll get a bit of a. So Sean Ann Fuse, SHAUNEANNFEUZ, and Doug Auld, AULD. So we'll be hearing some more from them. Well, certainly some more tunes from Sean later on this evening as I go through the breaks. So here's a nice little thank you, dear Simon. This is from Yolanda 007. Thank you very much for all your energy, time and knowledge you offer to all of us. Here is my question. You mentioned that the mantid or mantis beings were interested in spirituality. What else makes them especially happy or is good for their soul? Thank you, Simon.
Before that, I mean, Coronation Street, I can just imagine Hilda Ogden as a psyops operation.
Yeah.
Now, to the American listeners, of course, they'll now be scurrying to the Google to try to work that one out. Right, well, mantis are spiritual, and the problem is that not all mantises are, just as not all humans on this planet are good, so we shouldn't expect everyone from any group or background to uniformly be the same. But generally speaking, I think the mantis are much more pragmatic and have looked at the future, the projected future, and realized that at the particular position they were at, they were going nowhere. They're not half as bad as the reptilians, but they still were on a negative timeline in the sense that they had become stagnated. And so what they were trying to do was to change and challenge their behavior to see if they could learn from activities on this planet, which would then change them and their position. Now, they don't have the same ceremony and ritual backbone that the reptilians have, so therefore it was much easier for the mantis to be able to adapt and change. And so the question was asking what makes them happy. Well, what makes them happy is pride. They feel a great deal of pride when they invest energy in something, and then that something comes good, then they exult and they feel very, very proudful. When as a young kid, I passed all the tests that I was given, I was literally physically picked up off the ground and held up high in the air, and heard the most incredible chattering sound, which is them exulting. It was like canary birds, if you can think of 100 canary birds in a cage, that sort of chirruping or chirruping sound. And they genuinely can feel emotion which reptilians can't. I know when I was in a situation where there were some human doctors who had been brought in to monitor my heart, etc., etc., and I was having a sort of a private telepathic conversation with one of the aliens, and I basically said, I don't trust these people at all. I call them the men in the white coats, and the message I got back was, well, no, these are not to be trusted. And then one of the other mantis came round and put his arms around me and pulled me back against its legs, like you would an older brother would do to, you know, its young brother. So they are capable of emotion and feeling. They haven't got the same depth as a human. They do use their hands to reinforce telepathic comments. So if a mantis tells you something, obviously it's mind to mind, but they will move their hands to reinforce the message. And when I'm talking to consulting with people who have a mantis soul, they will always move their hands, and the first thing I say is, well, are you Italian? Because Italian people like to, you know, they speak with their hands, and they're not Italian, yet they move their hands far more than average. And I said, well, that's because you have a mantis soul, and that is part of it. So what makes them happy? Literally life. The sun rising, the moon on a beautiful moonlit night. They can connect with that. They understand that. And that's their salvation. Whereas the reptilians, sadly, don't get any joy from that. They get joy from controlling. And that's the big difference. You know, if you only get fulfillment because you've controlled something, then that's really sad. But if you can get joy and happiness because, I don't know, you saw a deer or a buck, you know, or a hare running across a field, then that's joy in life. That's connecting and being, that's the spark of divine creation and happiness that's still there. So yeah, they are able to understand at some level. Okay,
very interesting, very interesting. So so I'm, you know, because we're made of these different creatures, and thank you for the characterization, because I think it's really important, because we each have these creatures inside of us, and we have these drives inside of us, like the pride of, you know, pride in your work. Yeah, that's what we call, that's a normal human thing. But you're saying that comes from our mantis part of us, and you know, again, back to Doctor Who. Last week, the Doctor's assistant was trapped in a Dalek shell, and when she tried to communicate,
I haven't seen it. You're ruining it for me. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh right, okay. Well, there's a point. I mean, we've seen Clara in the Dalek shell before, and just there's just the way she can express her emotions in through that shell are distorted by the shell itself. So she tries to say, I love you, and it comes out, exterminate. Any form of emotion comes out as exterminate, whether it's positive or negative. So it was interesting to see inside the shell, you know, for through the eyes of our empathic human, his assistant. Anyhow, meanwhile... Sorry, would you like to respond
to that?
Actually, yeah, go on.
I think that's profound. It would immediately make me wonder whether the person who wrote that has experience of reptilian entities, because this is what I've been trying to say, that when you are a prisoner of your history and your culture and your ceremony and your ritual, anything and everything you try to express becomes reduced to the lowest denominator of your past. In other words, well, that's not allowed because we've never done it before. Or, you know, you can't be doing that because that contravenes this rule. And what you just described is the person in the Dalek encasement, and whatever she says or thinks, it is altered and changed because of the overriding weight of this creature, in this case a Dalek, this creature's history. And it just comes out as hate all the time. And that's a very, very, very close situation. And that's why these reptilian creatures have got to change their history and the way they connect with their history. Otherwise they will just end up like a Dalek. So no, that's profound. I really will watch that one.
Do check them out, because they go off of the BCIA site very quickly as well. Mind you, I'm sure somebody will upload it. Anywho, back to the questions. Right, that's an anonymous question. All lots of anons. Right, actually, this is a non-question.
No, you can't. No, you can't take it.
No.
You couldn't.
Yep. Okay, good. Okay, so here's good. They signed in. So anyway, so this is from Row 3400. Simon has mentioned the source many times. I'm wondering if the source is a single entity, or if it is in fact a race of extremely advanced beings that created this entire universe, including the souls, like in the 1999 movie The 13th Floor, where a world with self-aware humans was digitally created by other humans.
Right, okay. There are creational forces other than source. There are other entities or beings that can create. I mean, often, you know, people say that humans can be co-creators, and that's absolutely true. But we're talking now about creating planets or universes. We're not just talking about creating our own day-to-day lives. My true understanding of source is it is a non-male or female entity composed of one divine force, but through that connection it can connect to everything that's made by it, that's living. So technically it's one entity, but in reality it is interconnected to anything that it has made or seeks to create, and therefore has a connection to it. So that's why humans on the planet have a connection to source, because they were created by source. And then we have don't get confused with the word hive mind, but there is a network when people work together and share positive intent that is obviously magnified. So we are... So source is one entity, but it is connected to everything living. So that's my understanding of it.
Great, thank you. All right, okay. The Pope. There's some Pope quick. Let's do some Pope. Pope, New World Order. Right. Can Simon offer an explanation as to why the Pope didn't talk about vitamins in his public speeches during his time in America? Did the Pope talk about them at all? what's Agenda 2030 and you know, stuff? New World Order, Pope. What's the latest news that out of that camp?
And we did mention it a little bit earlier, but I can talk about vitamins. Was a question they brought up.
Yeah.
15 years ago, excuse me, 15 years ago, a secret document was written and laying down how they wished, how the New World Order, how it wished to develop. And what they wanted to do was to use legislation in individual countries to enact their wishes. So what they had to do was to have some force that all countries or sovereign governments would get down on their knees to it. So in other words, the Pope. And they wanted a system of legislation that once you'd labelled something, then those countries immediately followed through. And vitamins is the example. So 15 years ago, on a secret document, vitamins were to be labelled as poison. And that's quite clever, because if you then enact that in a government, doesn't matter which sovereign government, and you say, oh, what do we do with poison? Hold on. You go and find the right statute. Oh, yes, now poison, this is what we do with poison. We ban it. Okay? So we should expect to see in the not too distant future all vitamin supplements being banned because they're poison. So here's how it goes. Remember, these are not my views or opinions. The views and opinions I'm about to give you are the opinions of a very small, mad group of people who wish to see the New World Order in. And it goes like this. If you're old and poor, we don't want you. If you're young and you can't work because you're too little, we don't want you. And so what we've done, we've got over the last 10, 15 years, all these useless eaters, and that's the terminology that they use, who live off microwave dinners, nothing else. So what we're going to do is take all the vitamin goodness out of these processed foods, and then we're going to ban any vitamin sales in the world that we can, and by labelling them poison. So over a period of time, we will reduce the ability of the human body to fight off diseases, which at the moment are quite common but don't really have an effect. But if you reduce the vitamin intake of a human body, then quite mild diseases become quite serious. And a short while ago, the final vitamin factory was built for the New World Order, for the Illuminati, so that all of the elite families and their employees will be able to obtain vitamin supplements. Each individual has a password or a code number, and they will be able to order online. This is the plan. And they will be able to buy their vitamins so that they can supplement their food, and they therefore won't be degraded as everyone else's. So that's one aspect of this 2030 plan, and it goes back 15 years to a secret document that was drawn up, and indeed about 6 weeks ago, and I forget whether it was the Times newspaper, but there was an article there, and Cameron, the British Prime Minister, was talking, and some of the things that he was reported to have said by the journalist I knew had appeared on that secret document 15 years ago. So therefore I know that he is being primed from Great Britain's point of view to start pushing through some of these points. Another thing that appeared on this document, is continually being updated, is that all alternative media news sites are to be labelled as terrorist sites. So their object is to remove all alternative media so that you only have your official Fox News or BBC News. And all they do is they just say alternative media, and that would include our show, JP, and all the other shows you do, are terrorist. And then each sovereign government then says, oh, what do we do with terrorism? Oh, yes, well, we stop it. We do this, we do that. So what all the New World Order want to do is to put a label on things they don't like, and then the sovereign governments go and act on how they deal with that label. So this is all playing out. the Pope's kicked it all off, the whistle or the starting gun has been fired, and we are going to see how it develops. So that was a good question.
Indeed. So, yeah, well, one of the things is I keep referring to the station actually as a PTSD support group. So we might be able to sort of scoot round some of these rules. But we're not a radio station. We're a PTSD support group. Yeah, got any problems with that? Anyway, there was a big question that popped up as a result of what you just said. Anyway, so let's just move on, because I can't remember. So here's that's right. Wouldn't it be nice if that company, whoever they may be, got 7 billion orders, all paid for by, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation or something like that, you know, so that everybody got all the vitamins that they needed? That would be good for business, wouldn't it, Simon?
Well, there's a huge amount of gold left on the planet, which insiders refer to as King Solomon's gold. And this gold carries quite a karmic weight around it. And some of the dragon societies have access to this gold and are using it for beneficial purposes. There is enough gold in the planet still to give every man, woman and child a few $100. So that's actually not such a strange thing that you've said. There are moves afoot to try to use some of this money for good purposes. The Rothschilds don't need to make any more profits, thank you very much. And they have reached a point where they really don't need any more. All they want to do is to have the planet for themselves. You know, this is the bit that, again, people misunderstand. They tend to think that all reptilians are bad and all Palladians are good. They tend to think that if you are a vegetarian, you're a good person. And I would just remind you that Adolf Hitler was a vegetarian. So why are most of the Illuminati vegetarians? The reason is that they know that your psychic capabilities are enhanced when you don't eat murdered meat. I'm using that word deliberately. If you eat meat, and the animal obviously was killed for the food, you are reducing your psychic capabilities. So just because, you know, they're bad doesn't mean they don't want to increase their psychic capabilities. Of course they do. So they want the planet for themselves. They want to be able to walk out in Central Park or Hyde Park or any of the other beautiful parks in the world and not see anybody. They want it all for themselves. So this is the thinking. This is how it all came about. This beautiful planet, we don't want to share it with the ordinary people. We want to get rid of them, and then we can just have it all to ourselves. And that's why I've always said I don't like greed, because that's what it is, not being prepared to share.
So is it that they'll eventually get to a planet where they do have the place all to themselves?
No, what they'll have is an underground bunker all to themselves, JP.
Lovely.
Just like...
a nice little tin.
Exactly. Well, you see, on another timeline, that's exactly what happened. They created Armageddon. This is another timeline on Earth. They created Armageddon. And just as H.G. Wells, who wrote The Time Machine in 1895... H.G. Wells was a member of the Illuminati, and in 1895 he wrote a book called The Time Machine. Please, please, please read it, because that is exactly where we are now. In The Time Machine, the human race splits into two groups, those that go and live underground in secure bunkers, and the rest of the people who are chucked off up on top of the planet to die off. But in one timeline, what happens is that the human species becomes greys. And these are the ones underground in their bunker, hence you can see the connection with the Illuminati. And the residual humans who are left on the planet, expecting them to all die off, they don't. They became Nordics. That's on one timeline. So we are all interconnected. What happens on one timeline can happen on another timeline. It's incredibly fascinating because time is not linear. We only see it's linear because we're on this third dimensional place. Outside of it, you can see that time is either a loop or an H shape or a circle. In other words, it comes back on itself. And at the moment, we don't have a concept on this planet. We have time as a one line. You leave it behind you and you never see it again. You know, I remember primary school, you'd have the, on the bottom of the book, it would say Stone Age, you know, 1 million years BC, and then the line would come straight through to, you know, man to the moon. And this is how time is, you know, portrayed. It isn't correct. Anyway, that's that.
That would be a very interesting, you know, a kind of group summit or something, you know, what is the true Earth history? Everybody's got their own stories, and I'd like to bring that together one day to maybe have a few speakers, you know, giving their different stories and in the same thing, and maybe just have a discussion after that. Okay, so Syria is a desperate situation, and how come, you know, nobody's coming in and saying stop this? Does it have to play out like this?
No, it doesn't. It only happens because human consciousness is letting it happen. As usual, the elite who control the levers of power, physical levers of power, are playing out a game between themselves, where you've got Assad, who is pro-Russian, and you've got the rebel groups, which are funded by America, largely, trying to overturn Assad because they don't want Russia to have a foothold in the Middle East. Because you see, America and Israel are very closely connected. And Syria, of course, now is becoming very pro-Russian. So what we're seeing is ordinary, poor people being used in a game by power-playing madmen. And it's the same old story. Whenever you see refugees, you know, this is the product. This is what you get when you get people who are greedy or who make rules and laws that have no interest in the common man or woman and are only interested in their own survival and their own greed. And so when you see children and women and old people in desperate situations, you know, and yet there you have some of the richest people on the planet who actually, from their own personal fortunes, could in a blink of an eye put this right. So we need to ask ourselves, why would somebody who probably has the wealth of a quarter of the planet, why wouldn't they want to help people? And the reality is because they have no feeling for those people. They only care about themselves. And this is where we get the label service to self or service to others. And this is how you should judge people. Because if a person who has plenty doesn't share it, then they're making their statement. That's exactly who they are. And in many parables, Jesus explain that time and time again, that, you know, he or she that has something should share it. You know, I'm not a communist. I don't think you give it all away, but what you can do is give some of it away to try to alleviate the suffering of people who, through no fault of their own, are in a terrible situation. It's not like someone who, you know, was offered a job and said, I'm too good to do that job, and then they got poor. We're talking about 3 and 4 year old kids, you know, who are in situations of terrible, indescribable situations. Well, you know, if I was a multi-billionaire and I saw those images on television, which are true, I'd be phoning up my secretary and saying, right, how can we help these people? But they don't. They don't, because they don't care. And if they don't care, frankly, there's no place on this planet for them. Because you either care about people or you don't. So this is what's playing out. We are seeing those who have service only for themselves and those who have service for their others. And on one radio show recently, I made an appeal. I'm going to do it now. And my appeal is to all employees of the Negative Illuminati, providing you don't have blood on your hands, now is the time to jump ship. Leave while you still can. Because the time is coming when there'll be a judgment, And once the hands reach 12 o'clock, then, you know, your employees, or beg your pardon, your employers won't be taking you off planet or giving you a place in an underground bunker. You're going to be thrown to the wolves. So it is better now, while you still have a chance, to actually leave the sinking ship and come and join your brothers and sisters of humanity and do what's right. So there's my appeal.
Very good. So that's, I mean, this is basically, this is the moment. So here's another change of gear. I love it. A delightful change of gear. A fluffy, furry change of gear indeed. Shake up. It's obvious you have an amazing affinity with cats. Can you tell us more about the role the Kilroti played in the creation of the pyramids and the importance of your genetic material in the creation of your offspring?
I presume the question is asking about off-world offspring.
I'm wondering exactly what that context of your, whether it is one's genetic material or your specific, Simon's genetic material. I'm not quite sure about that. So anyway, let's talk about the Kilroti people and the cat people and
right.
things.
Originally, there was a group of people, a species, which UFO researchers refer to as lion beings, L-I-O-N, lion beings. And they were on one of the planets in the system of Orion. I don't know which one. And then after many millions of years, there was a falling out. And part of the race departed the planet, so they obviously had space travel. And they settled on another planet, but this time in British English, Sirius, in American English, Sirius system. And after many millions of years, they evolved so differently that they were no longer similar to the stock that they came from. So they created a new name for themselves. American military, not very good at pronouncing names that are not American or German, and I'm not being rude, the American military just not very good at pronouncing anything that's not American, full stop. So the actual proper name for these people is the Khetkari. I'll say it again, Khetkari. That is the name they use themselves. But I'm afraid the American military can't say Khetkari, but they can say Kilroti. So
it's the Khetkari. Khetkari. Which is like cat. The cat.
Well, why do you think we have food in this country called kitty cat? Because everything is linked. That's the point. Anyway, back to the story. So anyway, a contingent of reptilians who were very, very, very prominent in the Sirius star system, and I'm sure many listeners know that it's a veritable highway, that particular star system, with many portals, both short range, medium and long range, passing through it. And they commissioned a group of these Khetkari to undertake some building work in what we now know as ancient Egypt or Cairo. An Egyptologist will point to many of these statues and carvings in Egypt of cat-like beings and say, that's a man with a mask on, of a cat face. And I prefer to say that the guy or woman 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15,000 years ago who carved that was trying to send a message saying these creatures had a hand in the building of this pyramid. And if you notice, often in these carvings of a procession, these creatures are at the front. And that's very, very suggestive. So the pyramid shape, these creatures had a hand in that. They also are connected with the face on Mars, which is a lot older, and the pyramid shapes on Mars as well. There's a reason why there are pyramids on Mars and on Earth. Don't forget also in the Mayan and the Aztec cultures there are pyramids and many other places. Okay, genetics. The Khetkari don't have single children. They always have twins. And that's not really widely known. And I couldn't tell you why that is, but that's genetically when a female gets pregnant.
Well, cats have litters, don't they?
Well, they do on this planet. But the aliens we're talking about always have two twins.
Interesting.
And of course, when I went public with my story about association with alien creatures. That was the one topic that the media went and grabbed on. Many, many people have had their genetics taken from them and had that used to create hybrids. And this is the hybrid program. It isn't just the greys that do the hybrid program. Humans have the capability of having 12 strands of DNA. That means there are 12 separate star families out there in the many dimensions who can all trace a link to humanity. That means there are 12 different groups that are compatible with humans. So when through the 50s, 60s, 70s and so on, people talk about fraternization with aliens, it isn't so incredibly strange, because you only have to look at the Bible, where it says that, you know, it doesn't use the word God, it used gods, you know, took human women. So right back from the days of the Bible, it was confirmed that off-world entities were basically taking human females, and then hybrids were being formed. So this isn't a new thing. The question is, what's the purpose? If the purpose is to celebrate life, then that's fine. But if the purpose is to try to subvert the human race or subvert something, then that's not fine. So the question always for me was not it happening, but what's its purpose? And so that, I think, is perhaps a debate for another show.
Good, good. Wow, excellent. So, the Katkari. And they're described as kind of tall, proud-looking, long-haired, but are their faces more like a, well, you know, like us? Are they hairy? Do they have beards, noses, stuff like that? Or are they very much more lion-like? And do they have hands or paws? I mean, sorry, I'm really curious about those people.
Not too many women have beards.
I know one or two, but let's not go there. Anyway. Right.
But well, you did say like us. That's what confused me, JP.
Yeah, well, I've got a long beard, you know.
Yeah, I know you have. Right, what on earth was your question again?
Do they have paws or hands?
Right. It's a serious question, believe it or not, because when these creatures appeared, there's, as usual, a mass panic. And so what they did was they went into people's minds, they projected, so the person, the contactee, actually saw them as much more cat-like. And what these entities found was that when the human saw them as a cat, they became calmer and could converse with them. So when a researcher talks to a contactee, he or she describes a very much a pussycat-like face with two pointy ears and whiskers and cat-like face. I'm sorry to tell you, that's not what they look like. That is a mental projection that they project into the contactee's mind to prevent the contactee freaking out. And what these entities look like, their hair is always parted in the middle, and they have very long hair, and hence it's like a lion's mane. Now, human ears, the middle bit of your ear, is sort of in line with your eye, just probably a bit below your eye. But their ears are a good half an inch, maybe 3/4 inch higher up their head. So it looks to a human as if they're a bit cat-like, because they've got the hair parted down the middle, a long mane, and their ears are incredibly odd, higher up on their head. So they're not like pussycat ears, but they're certainly not like human ears. They are very muscular and they're very strong. A female Katkari is probably between 3 and 5 times stronger than a man. Incredibly strong. They have a very simple hierarchical structure. They have a royal family and everybody else. But to prevent a rebellion or a revolt by the peasants, they created a third tier. They created a middle class. And this middle class are those who serve the royal family. So you have everyone at the bottom, then you have a band in the middle of people who have jobs serving the royalty, and then you have the royalty. So they're not evolved, they're fourth dimensional, and they need to get away from that, but nevertheless that's what they are. They have incredible history with humans, and being fourth dimensional, they understand people quite well. It's just this silly concept of time we have here. We're running out of time, JP, so we should do some more questions.
So indeed, yes. Now, here's I think this is another beautiful question. Lyran Lady 777. It seems to me one of the greatest assets we have is the human emotion, and not accursed or to be conquered. Why were we created with emotions, and what would be the best way to honor our emotions, and how do our emotions connect to our soul? I think that's a brilliant question.
Not surprising, because the persons call themselves Lyra, and as far as I'm concerned, Lyra was the birthplace of the human condition. And Lyran people are some of the most spiritual people on the planet. We as a race were created with this because we asked for it. We wanted a challenge, we wanted to develop, we wanted to have the chance to be something beyond our flesh and blood. And I mean, you think of a cat or a dog, they don't have that. They are a divine creature and they have a soul, but they don't have that ultimate top part to it. And we do, which means both good and bad. Bad in the sense that, well, it's not bad because it's divinely created, but bad because humans can make it bad. That if it's used incorrectly, it can create the most terrible harm, which we've seen and we've just been talking about. But when used properly and for the good, it could move on not just this planet, but the ripple effect could have a wonderful effect on many, many planets in many dimensions. So we have been given this because the human spirit is one of the most important living creatures anywhere in the multiverse. And that's why, you know, it's so wrong to be oppressed by anything, but particularly by a reptilian, because a reptilian doesn't have any of the spirituality that a human does. And the reality, of course, is that humans are far more capable than reptilians. So we are in this position because we chose to be in this position. We wish to learn and we wish to develop. And because humans are special. So that's my answer. Humans are special.
Very interesting. You know, we're talking about these character. You've been giving some good pictures of the character of these races. Are the Khetkari one of the 12 that constitute our DNA strands? And so when you're talking about these different characteristics, these are the strands that we activate, and these are the talents that we have, yet also these tendencies to fall into, like you're saying, to fall into caste systems,
yes,
like the Khetkari, or to be over-attached to our dominance and control, like the reptilians. So it's a fascinating thing. So we've covered three races here. Now here's another question which also relates to that, which is the Rh negative blood thing. Now here's the thing: my dad was Rh negative. He was French Canadian, but I have A positive blood. Does that mean I'm somehow not as spiritual as those people who have got? So, yeah, I'm being facetious because I think this whole thing is a bit of toot, you know. So can you clear up the whole Rh negative business and you know, it doesn't make people special, does it? What the hell is it?
Well, we could all be eating special cheese and that would make us special. The reality is that from a spiritual point of view, no, it isn't. But from a reptilian Illuminati bloodline, yes, it is. The reptilians, through their teachings and learnings, had a great impact on the Anunnaki, and through the Anunnaki down to the control systems of our presidents and prime ministers and all the rest of it. And what's been written into law is supposed to be things that are equitable, but we only have to think back to the time of Adolf Hitler, that you had certain colour eyes and certain colour hair, And in the eyes of the law in Germany at that time, you were more superior than somebody else. So we have to be very careful, because if we start to put values to traits, then we can become, make ourselves more important. The reality is that the bloodline group believe that anybody who has a family that contains Rh negative blood are the original elite, going back many thousands of years. Now, my own family, my mother was Rh negative. In fact, I would have been terribly surprised if she wasn't, given my background. So it doesn't make us special, but in the eyes of these people who are all into ritual, ceremony, dogma, it does, because that means that an individual with that type of background is somebody that they would be interested in. And I've talked to my clients and I explained to them that, look at poor old Marilyn Monroe, blonde hair. And we have this thing, don't we? And I don't know if it's the same in America, but in Britain it's, don't say it so much now, but if you were a blonde-haired bimbo, a blonde-haired girl, you were supposed to be stupid. This was the thing put out. It comes all the way from the Illuminati. But if you're a female with red hair, then you are more important than a female with blonde hair. And as a result of that, then, you know, if you got a job with the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers, then you'd have an administrative job, because you had red hair and you were a female. Green eyes, always got to have green eyes. But if you were blonde haired, well, you'd probably be one of the waitresses, something like that. So they believe in it. They made it part of their law. And you know, you I'd ask your listeners or our listeners to go and research the rhesus monkey and go and have a look at the rhesus monkey. And you'll find some very interesting points about that. Okay, next one. We've got a couple of minutes left.
Okay, everybody's giving their blood types in the chat room. It's it's pluses and minuses. Yeah, anyway. Here's a quick question. Is everyone on Earth a starseed? If not, how many of them here? What is their purpose?
Right. Everybody on this planet is important. And again, I don't want to be labels. I've used the label starseeds, indigos, because that's the word we all use. Vast majority of starseeds or indigos are coming from the fourth dimension. Not all of them, but most of them. And the simple reason is that it's much easier for someone from the fourth dimension to be assimilated and to hit the ground running here in the third. If you come from the fifth, sixth, seventh, then it's a heck of a shock when you come here. Everybody has the potential to be good. Some people arrive here with knowledge from far away, with a plan, and the ability to put that plan into effect. So we could call them starseeds or indigo kids. But my main concern, of course, is that we begin to create an us and them culture between, well, I'm awake and you're not. I'm an indigo kid and you're not. I'm a starseed. And, you know, and I see it in the New Age. You go to a conference and people are trying to outdo themselves, for God's sake. You know, and what they should be doing is focusing on the battle before us, not trying to actually show themselves to be better or not. If we can bring starseeds or indigo kids together, then we can marshal some very, very useful energies. That's why the negative elite try to identify these people and take them out. They either try to subvert them or get rid of them or put a demon into them to control them. But if we can preserve these people, get them working together, because their energy is quite strong. So there is a battle going on. There's a battle going on, not just on the planet, but above the planet. So whilst I don't particularly want to go down the road of you know, who's right and who's wrong, there certainly are a number of people on this planet who have a lot of knowledge, very, very powerful. We just need to coordinate that and use it properly.
Thank you. Right, now, Simon, the next show was scheduled, but the guy's got a cold and Nancy's away. We were going to have a round table. Are you available for any more period of time, or do you need to shut the show down now?
Do you know what? I would have done, but I want to go and watch Downton Abbey on television.
Well, in that case, let's let you relax and chill out and watch Downton Abbey. And thank you so much, Simon. So listen, if anybody wants to call in, and, you know, we can discuss some of these things, you know, some of the Connecting Conscious group, come in and, we'll check out. We'll call it. It's part of the ODD collective, so everybody's ODD around here. You know, oppositional defiance. So, thank you so very much, Simon. I'll see you next month for the.
It's been a very good show. Some really good questions. You know what, JP? The questions get more and more profound each month.
Don't know.
Just so pleased, and I'm so delighted that, you know, over the last few years, generally. People are changing and waking up for the better. And you remember, people like you, JP, doing the show, and others, it's absolutely imperative that you keep going. So I wasn't particularly happy when you were off air for 3 weeks. So I'm really glad you're back on.
Thank you very much. So here we go. And, well, as I said, call in and, we'll bring a discussion up. We'll have a good round table. Thank you very much, Simon. Good night.
See you. Good night.